Chapter 54. Now, she said, you will know whether this is the handwriting or not. You know it is the handwriting. Now if you will listen, you will know that this must be the list of statistics which was to be the nub of your great effort, and the accompanying blast the beginning of the burst of eloquence which was continued on the next page, and you will recognize that there was where you broke down. She read the page. Mr. Trollope said, this is perfectly astounding. Still, what is all this to me? It is nothing. It does not concern me. The speech is made, and there an end. I did break down for a moment, and in a rather uncomfortable place, since I had led up to those statistics with some grandeur. The hiatus was pleasanter to the house and the galleries than it was to me. But it is no matter now. A week has passed. The jests about it ceased 3 or 4 days ago. The whole thing is a matter of indifference to me, Miss Hawkins. But you apologized, and promised the statistics for next day. Why didn't you keep your promise? The matter was not of sufficient consequence. The time was gone by to produce an effect with them. But I hear that other friends of the soldiers' pension bill desire them very much. I think you ought to let them have them. Miss Hawkins, this silly blunder of my copyist evidently has more interest for you than it has for me. I will send my private secretary to you, and let him discuss the subject with you at length. Did he copy your speech for you? Of course he did. Why all these questions? Tell me, how did you get hold of that page of manuscript? That is the only thing that stirs a passing interest in my mind. I'm coming to that. Then she said, much as if she were talking to herself, it does seem like taking a deal of unnecessary pains for a body to hire another body to construct a great speech for him, and then go and get still another body to copy it before it can be read in the house. Miss Hawkins, what do you mean by such talk as that? Why, I am sure I mean no harm to anybody in the world. I am certain that I overheard the Hon. Mr. Buckstone either promised to write your great speech for you, or else get some other competent person to do it. This is perfectly absurd, madam, perfectly absurd. And Mr. Trollope affected a laugh of derision. Why, the thing has occurred before now. I mean that I have heard that congressmen have sometimes hired literary grubs to build speeches for them. Now didn't I overhear a conversation like that I spoke of? Saw. Why, of course you may have overheard some such jesting nonsense. But would one be in earnest about so farcical a thing? Well, if it was only a joke, why did you make a serious matter of it? Why did you get the speech written for you, and then read it in the house without ever having it copied? Mr. Trollope did not laugh this time. He seemed seriously perplexed. He said, come, play out your jest, Miss Hawkins. I can't understand what you are contriving, but it seems to entertain you, so please, go on. I will, I assure you, but I hope to make the matter entertaining to you too. Your private secretary never copied your speech. Indeed? Really, you seem to know my affairs better than I do myself. I believe I do. You can't name your own amanuensis, Mr. Trollope. That is sad, indeed. Perhaps Miss Hawkins can? Yes, I can. I wrote your speech myself, and you read it from my manuscript. There, now. Mr. Trollope did not spring to his feet and smite his brow with his hand, while a cold sweat broke out all over him, and the color forsook his face. No, he only said, good God, and looked greatly astonished. Laura handed him her commonplace book, and called his attention to the fact that the handwriting there and the handwriting of this speech were the same. He was shortly convinced. He laid the book aside and said, composedly, well, the wonderful tragedy is done, and it transpires that I am indebted to you for my late eloquence. What of it? What was all this for, and what does it amount to after all? What do you propose to do about it? Oh, nothing. It is only a bit of pleasantry. When I overheard that conversation, I took an early opportunity to ask Mr. Buckstone if he knew of anybody who might want a speech written. I had a friend, and so forth and so on. I was the friend, myself. I thought I might do you a good turn then, and depend on you to do me one by and by. I never let Mr. Buckstone have the speech till the last moment, and when you hurried off to the house with it, you did not know there was a missing page, of course, but I did. And now perhaps you think that, if I refuse to support your bill, you will make a grand exposure? Well, I had not thought of that. I only kept back the page for the mere fun of the thing, but since you mention it, I don't know, but I might do something, if I were angry. My dear Miss Hawkins, if you were to give out that you composed my speech, you know very well that people would say it was only your raillery, your fondness for putting a victim in the pillory, and amusing the public at his expense. It is too flimsy, Miss Hawkins, for a person of your fine inventive talent to contrive an abler device than that. Come. It is easily done, Mr. Trollope. I will hire a man, and pin this page on his breast, and label it, The Missing Fragment of the Hon. Mr. Trollope's great speech, which speech was written, and composed by Miss Laura Hawkins under a secret understanding for $100, and the money has not been paid. ... and I will pin round about it notes in my handwriting, which I will procure from prominent friends of mine for the occasion. Also your printed speech in the Globe, showing the connection between its bracketed hiatus and my fragment. And I give you my word of honor, that I will stand that human bulletin board in the rotunda of the Capitol, and make him stay there a week. You see, you are premature, Mr. Trollope. The wonderful tragedy is not done yet, by any means. Come, now, doesn't it improve? Mr. Trollope opened his eyes rather widely at this novel aspect of the case. He got up, and walked the floor, and gave himself a moment for reflection. Then he stopped and studied Laura's face a while, and ended by saying, "Well, I am obliged to believe Jan would be reckless enough to do that. Then don't put me to the test, Mr. Trollope. But let's drop the matter. I have had my joke, and you've borne the infliction becomingly enough. It spoils a jest to harp on it after one has had one's laugh. I would much rather talk about my bill. So would I, now, my clandestine amanuensis. Compared with some other subjects, even your bill is a pleasant topic to discuss. Very good indeed. I thought I could persuade you. Now I am sure you will be generous to the poor Negro and vote for that bill. Yes, I feel more tenderly toward the oppressed colored man than I did. Shall we bury the hatchet, and be good friends and respect each other's little secrets, on condition that I vote aye on the measure? With all my heart, Mr. Trollope. I give you my word of that. It is a bargain. But isn't there something else you could give me too?" Laura looked at him inquiringly a moment, and then she comprehended. "Oh, yes. You may have it now. I haven't any more use for it." She picked up the page of manuscript, but she reconsidered her intention of handing it to him, and said, "But never mind. I will keep it close. No one shall see it. You shall have it as soon as your vote is recorded." Mr. Trollope looked disappointed, but presently made his adieu, and had got as far as the hall, when something occurred to Laura. She said to herself, "I don't simply want his vote under compulsion. He might vote aye, but work against the bill in secret, for revenge. That man is unscrupulous enough to do anything. I must have his hearty cooperation as well as his vote. There is only one way to get that." She called him back, and said, "I value your vote, Mr. Trollope, but I value your influence more. You are able to help a measure along in many ways, if you choose. I want to ask you to work for the bill as well as vote for it. It takes so much of one's time, Miss Hawkins, and time is money, you know. Yes, I know it is, especially in Congress. Now there is no use in you and I dealing in pretenses, and going at matters in roundabout ways. We know each other's disguises are nonsense. Let us be plain. I will make it an object to you to work for the bill. Don't make it unnecessarily plain, please. There are little proprieties that are best preserved. What do you propose?
Well, this. She mentioned the names of several prominent congressmen. Now, said she, these gentlemen are to vote and work for the bill simply out of love for the Negro and out of pure generosity. I have put in a relative of each as a member of the university incorporation. They will handle a million or so of money, officially, but will receive no salaries. A larger number of statesmen are to vote and work for the bill also out of love for the Negro gentlemen of but moderate influence. These and out of pure generosity I am to see that relatives of theirs have positions in the university, with salaries, and good ones too. You will vote and work for the bill from mere affection for the Negro, and I desire to testify my gratitude becomingly. Make free choice. Have you any friend whom you would like to present with a salaried or unsalaried position in our institution?
Well, I have a brother-in-law, that same old brother-in-law, you good unselfish provider. I have heard of him often, through my agents. How regularly he does turn up, apostrophe to be sure. He could deal with those millions virtuously, and with ability, too, but of course he would rather he had a salaried position.
Oh, no, said the gentleman, facetiously, we are very humble in our desires. We want no money, we labor solely for our country and require no reward, but the luxury of an applauding conscience. Make him one of those poor hard-working unsalaried corporators, and let him do everybody good with those millions and go hungry himself. I will try to exert a little influence in favor of the bill. Arrived at home, Mr. Trollope sat down and thought it all over something after this fashion. It is about the shape it might have taken if he had spoken it aloud. My reputation is getting a little damaged, and I meant to clear it up brilliantly with an exposure of this bill at the supreme moment, and ride back into Congress on the eclat of it. And if I had that bit of manuscript, I would do it yet. It would be more money in my pocket in the end than my brother-in-law will get out of that incorporatorship, fat as it is. But that sheet of paper is out of my reach. She will never let that get out of her hands. And what a mountain it is. It blocks up my road completely. She was going to hand it to me once. Why didn't she? Must be a deep woman. Deep devil. That is what she is. A beautiful devil and perfectly fearless too. The idea of her pinning that paper on a man and standing him up in the rotunda looks absurd at a first glance. But she would do it. She is capable of doing anything. I went there hoping she would try to bribe me good solid capital that would be in the exposure. Well, my prayer was answered. She did try to bribe me, and I made the best of a bad bargain and let her. I am checkmated. I must contrive something fresh to get back to Congress on. Very well, a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. I will work for the bill. The incorporatorship will be a very good thing. As soon as Mr. Trollope had taken his leave, Laura ran to Senator Dilworthy and began to speak, but he interrupted her and said distressfully, without even turning from his writing to look at her, "Only half an hour. You gave it up early, child. However, it was best, I'm sure it was best and safest. Give it up. I." The senator sprang up, all aglow.
"My child, you can't mean that you—" "I've made him promise on honor to think about a compromise tonight and come and tell me his decision in the morning."
"Good.
There's hope yet." "That nonsense, uncle. I've made him engage to let the Tennessee land bill utterly alone."
"Impossible.
You—" "I've made him promise to vote with us."
"Incredible.
Abso—" "I've made him swear that he'll work for us."
"Preposterous.
Utterly pre—break a window, child, before I suffocate."
"No matter, it's true anyway. Now we can march into Congress with drums beating and colors flying."
"Well, well, well. I'm sadly bewildered, sadly bewildered.
I can't understand it at all. The most extraordinary woman that ever. It's a great day. It's a great day. There, let me put my hand in benediction on this precious head. Ah, my child, the poor Negro will bless. Oh, bother the poor Negro, uncle. Put it in your speech. Good night. Goodbye. We'll marshal our forces and march with the dawn. Laura reflected a while when she was alone, and then fell to laughing, peacefully. Everybody works for me, so ran her thought. It was a good idea to make Buckstone lead Mr. Trollope on to get a great speech written for him, and it was a happy part of the same idea for me to copy the speech after Mr. Buckstone had written it, and then keep back a page. Mr. B was very complimentary to me when Trollope's breakdown in the house showed him the object of my mysterious scheme. I think he will say still finer things when I tell him the triumph the sequel to it has gained for us. But what a coward the man was, to believe I would have exposed that page in the rotunda, and so exposed myself. However, I don't know. I will think a moment. Suppose he voted no. Suppose the bill. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.